Imagine a hacker operating out of Iran, and they decide they want to completely halt surgical procedures in a major hospital in Sydney, Australia.
Right.
Like, they don't launch a direct assault on the hospital's network. They don't, target the Australian power grid.
Because that would trigger all sorts of alarms.
Exactly. Instead, they target the internal corporate servers of a medical supplier that is, halfway across the world in the US. And the moment that supplier systems go dark, the hospital in Sydney just freezes, surgeries are delayed, and this massive physical supply chain just, well, it grinds to a
Is there a
halt.
domino effect?
It really is.
Yeah.
We usually think of cyber risk as this localized IT problem, right? Like a phishing email or a locked laptop. But the reality is that the threat landscape has fundamentally
It
industrialized.
absolutely has.
It's woven so deeply into global geopolitics and our digital supply chains that a weakness in a network in one hemisphere is like an immediate operational crisis in another.
It's a profound shift in how we need to conceptualize risk. And you see that interconnectedness mapped out perfectly in the source we're looking at today.
Yeah, the April 2026 edition of the New Zealand Incident Response Bulletin, specifically issue 87.
Right. When you read through the intelligence in this bulletin, the dominant theme isn't just that threat actors are getting more sophisticated. I mean, they are,
Sure.
but it's that the blast radius of a single incident has just expanded exponentially. We are no longer dealing with isolated events. We're dealing with cascading systemic failures.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our goal today is to take the raw intelligence from this bulletin and really decode the actual mechanics of this industrialized threat landscape.
Sounds good.
We want to bridge the gap between global, nation-state economic statecraft and the very specific vulnerabilities that might be sitting in the cloud architecture you use for work every single day.
Because to understand what you're actually up against, you have to look at both the macro strategies of global powers and the micro failures of basic software engineering.
Exactly. So let's start at that macro level. The bulletin details these recent moves by the European Union to heavily sanction specific cyber actors. Chinese companies like Integrity Technology Group and Anxin, and an Iranian firm called Eminet Pasargad.
Right.
What stands out to me isn't just the sanctions themselves, but the language the EU is using. They're explicitly labeling these cyber operations as economic statecraft.
And that phrasing is highly deliberate.
Yeah.
Yeah, by categorizing these attacks as economic statecraft, the EU is formally acknowledging that cyber warfare is no longer just a tool for espionage. It's not just intelligence gathering anymore.
It's something bigger.
Much bigger. It is a primary lever of national economic policy. Nation states are using these companies, which are basically proxy private sector contractors, to artificially manipulate global markets.
Wow.
Yeah, they're stealing intellectual property at an industrial scale and actively degrading the economic competitiveness of rival nations. It's a state-sponsored transfer of wealth.
Which means corporate networks are now the actual battlefield. And you can
Oh.
see how this geopolitical tension, forces massive operational burdens onto allied
Right,
nations.
absolutely.
Like the bulletin notes that New Zealand's intelligence agencies, the GCSB and SIS, are actively briefing the New Zealand Defense Force with continuous threat intelligence regarding this conflict involving Iran.
Yes, and what's fascinating is the friction that creates within the Five Eyes partnership.
Right, because sharing intelligence isn't simple.
No, not at all. The bulletin explicitly highlights the sensitivity of sharing this intelligence. It points out the strict legal and human rights frameworks New Zealand has to navigate when deciding what to share with partners and what to hold back.
It's a balancing act.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Intelligence sharing isn't just a fire hose of data, it's carefully calibrated foreign policy. New Zealand has to balance its Five Eyes commitments with its own independent obligations.
And they're doing this while trying to protect against an incredibly fluid threat environment, which brings us back to that opening scenario with the Australian hospitals.
Right, because that perfectly illustrates the real-world consequence of all this geopolitical maneuvering.
Let's break down the mechanics of that specific incident. So the bulletin outlines an attack by a group called Handala, which has Iranian links. They targeted Stryker, which is a massive U.S. medical technology company.
Huge supplier.
Yeah. Now, Handala claimed they wiped terabytes of data, but Stryker publicly stated that the breach was strictly contained to their internal corporate Microsoft environment.
Right, their corporate network.
But the immediate fallout wasn't in the US, it was in hospitals across Victoria and New South Wales and Australia, which were instantly placed on high alert.
panic mode, essentially.
Right. I mean, it's like someone cutting the power line miles away just to stop a surgery in your local hospital. But I have to push back here. If Stryker's containment narrative is accurate and the malware never actually touched the hospital's networks, why should an Australian hospital or, you know, anyone listening to this actually care about a vendor's internal IT problem?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it makes perfect sense. Because in 2026, the distinction between a digital supply chain and a physical supply chain just no longer exists.
Okay, how so?
Well, Stryker provides critical surgical implants and hospital equipment. If their internal Microsoft environment goes down, say, their ERP systems or their ordering portals, they literally cannot process an order.
Oh, I see.
So the hospital might have a perfectly secure network, but they suddenly have zero visibility into when the next shipment of essential consumables will arrive. The physical supply chain freezes because the digital administration layer was compromised.
That's terrifying. They weren't afraid of the malware spreading. They were terrified of a supply shock.
Exactly. A shock that would force them to cancel life-saving procedures. It redefines what we mean by a perimeter.
Yeah, your security perimeter isn't just the edge of your own network anymore. It extends into the corporate infrastructure of every single vendor you rely on.
Every single one.
So if nation states are executing this economic statecraft by targeting supply chain dependencies, you would assume that governments are, I don't know, aggressively neutralizing the threat or locking down their procurement processes.
Yeah, you assume that, yes.
But the bulletin paints a picture that is almost the exact opposite. Let's look at the law enforcement angle first, because there's this massive announcement from Europol.
Yeah, Europol coordinated an operation across 23 countries. It resulted in the takedown of over 373,000 dark websites.
That is a huge number.
It is. These were platforms facilitating massive fraud rings, stolen data marketplaces, malware as a service operations. On paper, it's a staggering operational victory.
So what does this all mean? Because I look at a number like 373,000 sites and I want to feel safer. But isn't this just like chopping a head off a hydra?
That's a good way to put it.
Does a takedown of this scale actually make us safer, or does it just mutate the threat into something harder to track?
Your intuition is entirely correct. It speaks to the maturity of the cybercrime economy. Yes, disrupting that many sites imposes a temporary cost on these cartels. It breaks their communication and cash flow.
But it doesn't stop them.
No. These are highly resilient industrialized syndicates. When you shatter a centralized dark web marketplace, you don't destroy the demand for stolen data. You just create a diaspora.
Right. They just move somewhere else.
Exactly. The operators migrate to decentralized infrastructure. They use encrypted peer-to-peer networks or shift into jurisdictions that just entirely ignore Europol.
So it's an illusion.
Completely. Reliance on law enforcement creates a dangerous illusion of security for the general public. You simply cannot rely on Europol to intercept an attack on your organization.
The defense has to happen at the perimeter, which, as we said, includes third-party vendors. And this is where the bulletin shifts from international espionage to, honestly, staggering bureaucratic negligence.
Yeah, the Queensland Audit Office report.
Yes. They reviewed how government departments in Queensland, Australia, are managing their third-party cyber risks. Remember, these are the exact vendors being targeted for economic warfare. And the auditors essentially just walked right in.
It is almost too easy for them.
They easily obtained passwords, accessed sensitive IT systems, and in two specific cases, completely bypassed all controls to gain the highest level of administrative access to government environments.
And the root cause wasn't some incredibly sophisticated zero-day exploit. It was a fundamental failure in contract governance.
The paperwork.
The paperwork. The audit office reviewed 36 distinct government contracts with third-party service providers.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those 36, only two, just two, required the vendor to actually report cyber incidents back to the government.
That is insane. Only two. That means for the other 34 contracts, a vendor could suffer a catastrophic breach, have a government department's entire data set stolen, and they have zero obligation to even pick up the phone.
None whatsoever. You have procurement teams siloing themselves off from security teams. Procurement just wants the lowest bid and a signature.
While the security team has no idea that the vendor holding their sensitive data is basically using a padlock made of wet cardboard.
It is the ultimate blind spot. We're watching adversaries map out supply chains for global economic warfare, while local governments are effectively operating on an honor system. If the contract governance is this weak, the technical implementation will be even weaker.
Which is the perfect bridge to the next section of the bulletin, because we go from organizational negligence straight into sheer technical negligence.
The basic errors.
Right. We've established the front doors, the vendor contracts are wide open, but the windows are also unlocked because of simple software bugs and forgotten legacy data. Let's look at the UK company's house breach.
That's a textbook example.
This is the official registrar for all companies in the UK. They had to completely suspend their online web filing service because a vulnerability exposed the personal details of directors for over 5 million companies. Addresses, dates of birth, private emails.
And the bulletin notes that this wasn't a complex multi-stage intrusion. It was reportedly a simple software flaw exploitable through normal browser behavior.
Let's explain the mechanics of that. Because when people hear browser exploit, they think of complex scripts. But often, in public-facing portals, we're talking about basic parameter tampering, right?
Yes, exactly. Insecure direct object reference.
Right. An attacker logs in, looks at the URL, which might say, like, userid123, and they simply change that number to 124. And because the software fails to validate if user123 is allowed to see user124's profile,
the database just hands over the sensitive information. It blindly trusts the client's request.
Wow.
And when you scale a basic authorization failure across a database as vast as the UK company's house, a trivial flaw transforms into a national-level privacy breach. You don't need sophisticated malware. You just need a developer who forgot a permissions check.
And if you combine that kind of application flaw with poor cloud infrastructure management, you get the LexisNexis breach, which is maybe the most frustrating case study in this entire bulletin.
It really highlights the modern cloud problem.
LexisNexis confirmed a threat actor known as FulcrumSec stole roughly 2 gigabytes of data, affecting about 400,000 individuals. The attack chain is crazy. They exploited a vulnerability called React2Shell and then pivoted using weakly secured AWS resources.
Let's break down the React2Shell component first. React is a front-end library for user interfaces. But nowadays, front-end frameworks are deeply integrated with back-end server environments.
Okay, so they're connected.
Very closely. A vulnerability in how these frameworks handle inputs can actually allow an attacker to bypass the application entirely. They execute arbitrary code directly on the underlying server. They get a shell, which means direct command line access.
So they punch a hole through the web interface and drop straight into the server's operating system. But how do they get from that server to the massive Amazon Web Services data stores?
This is where identity and access management comes in, IAM. In AWS, that web server doesn't sit in isolation. It has an assigned IAM role. It's effectively wearing a digital ID badge that grants it permission to interact with other AWS services.
Okay, so if an attacker gets a shell on that server,
they can query the cloud provider's metadata service to assume that server's IAM role. They steal the ID badge. And this is where LexisNexis failed dramatically. That server's ID badge had permissions that were way too broad.
And the kicker here, the detail that makes this so embarrassing, is what that ID badge had access to. LexisNexis admitted the exposed cloud resources contained legacy deprecated data from before 2020.
Five-year-old data.
Yeah, it's like installing a $1 million retina scanner on the front door but leaving the spare key under the welcome mat. They had highly privileged cloud servers connected to buckets full of forgotten data.
What's fascinating here is that this is a systemic issue across the entire industry. Organizations spin up cloud environments for temporary projects or testing. They dump data into an S3 bucket, connect a server with full read-write permissions, and then the project ends.
But they forget to clean it up.
Exactly. The engineers move on, but the infrastructure is never decommissioned. The IAM roles stay active. It fundamentally proves that in a cloud ecosystem, old data is not a dormant asset. Old data is an active, volatile liability.
And we're seeing this exact liability causing damage right here in New Zealand. The bulletin highlights warnings that New Zealand's overall cyber posture is, quote, barely up to scratch.
Yes, specifically pointing to recent breaches at health platforms like MediMap and Manage My Health.
And again, these aren't advanced persistent threats burning zero-day exploits. They are victims of weak internal controls exposing sensitive health info. So just to recap where we are. Government contracts are blind to vendor risk, developers are failing basic authorization checks, and organizations are hoarding legacy data with master keys left out in the open.
It's an incredibly fragile foundation.
Which makes the final section of this bulletin deeply unsettling, because we're introducing a completely new variable into this mess, artificial intelligence.
And not just the standard chatbots.
Right. We're not talking about a cloud-based AI in a browser. The bulletin focuses heavily on the shift toward local AI agents.
This is an architectural paradigm shift. Until now, you sent a prompt to a remote server, it processed it, and sent text back. But the industry is pushing advanced models like Anthropic's Claude Mythos Preview directly onto the endpoint.
Onto your actual laptop.
Yes, executing locally on your desktop or mobile device.
And the capability of these local models is staggering. The bulletin notes they are analyzing code bases and finding weaknesses at an unprecedented scale. But the real danger isn't the analytical power, right? It's the shift in agency.
That's the key word. Agency. The bulletin explicitly states these AI agents are moving from passive respondents to active participants. They take action.
Okay, what does that mean practically?
Well, to function as a true digital assistant, a local AI cannot be kept in a sandbox. It needs deep integration into your operating system. It needs to read incoming emails, parse your local files, search corporate drives, and even draft communications for you.
So it has to act as me.
Precisely. The local AI agent inherently adopts the identity and access permissions of the logged-in user. Whatever systems you can access, the AI can access.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the traditional security model just completely breaks down here.
It really does.
Think about it. If I have an AI agent on my laptop inheriting my identity and access rights, how does IT even monitor that? Let's say a phishing email lands in my inbox, and hidden inside, maybe in white text, is a prompt injection.
A hidden command.
Yeah. It commands the AI to quietly search my hard drive for financial projections and email them to an external server. If the AI executes that, it's doing it under my user account. How do you distinguish between the AI going rogue and me just working incredibly fast?
This raises an important question, and it's the exact crisis endpoint security is facing right now. Mm. Traditional tools look for signatures, known malware hashes, or bad IP addresses. But a compromised local AI agent doesn't look like malware.
Because it's using the real software.
Exactly. It uses legitimate built-in operating system APIs. An AI opening a spreadsheet, reading it, and attaching it to Outlook generates the exact same system telemetry as a human employee doing it.
You can't police a digital ghost that wears a legitimate employee badge.
You can't. And factor in the sheer velocity. A human takes 10 minutes to locate files and send them. An AI agent could scan thousands of directories and exfiltrate the data in milliseconds.
The window to stop it just vanishes.
Which means mitigation has to evolve. We have to shift from signature detection to granular behavioral analysis. Organizations have to strictly control these deployments.
Limit the permissions.
Right. Enforce the principle of least privilege aggressively. The AI should only access specific folders it actually needs. And monitoring has to pivot to intent and velocity.
So if the AI suddenly accesses hundreds of files a second and automated circuit breaker trips and locks the account?
Exactly. Plus, we have to be ruthlessly cautious with add-ons and plugins. Every third-party extension is a new pathway for a prompt injection attack. We're moving from managing passive IT to managing autonomous software entities that operate at machine speed.
It is a completely new paradigm. Let's pull all these threads together for you because we have covered immense ground today.
We certainly have.
We started with the macro, how the EU classifying cyber attacks as economic statecraft is putting massive pressure on alliances like the Five Eyes. We saw how an attack on a US supplier can freeze a physical hospital in Australia.
The interconnectedness.
Yeah. Then we stripped away the illusion of security. Europol takedowns just fragment criminal cartels, while local governments fail to mandate basic breach reporting and contracts. We walk through simple browser flaws and the massive liability of legacy data hoarding. And finally, this new frontier, highly privileged local AI agents.
It's a complex web of vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
And when you synthesize all of this, there's a final, really critical implication that sits right at the intersection of everything we've talked about.
Lay it on us.
Consider this. We've established that local AI agents act autonomously, right? They inherit your human permissions and work at lightning speed. We've also established that global supply chains are a fragile web of third-party vendors with terrible contract management and security blind spots.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. So what happens when your highly privileged AI assistant automatically starts interacting, negotiating, or sharing data with a vendor's compromised AI assistant? What if that vendor's AI has already been compromised through a prompt injection or a legacy database? We are rapidly approaching a reality where massive systemic supply chain compromises won't require human threat actors manually hacking into networks.
It'll just be machines talking to machines.
Exactly. instantaneous, invisible supply chain compromises happening at a speed humans can't even monitor, let alone stop.
Now that is a thought to chew on. As you go about your day, take a hard look at the tools you're relying on. Think about the permissions you've granted, the vendors you trust, and those old data folders sitting in the cloud that you haven't looked at since 2019.
They're a bigger risk than you think.
Definitely. Because the gap between an abstract geopolitical threat and the software on your desktop is closing faster than ever. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay vigilant, stay curious, and we will catch you next time.